Hey, Sharon.
Hi, Billy.
How you doing?
Great. It's good to be back.
It is good to be back. Took a little vacation.
Yeah, so you know it's mid-January. Days are short. Application deadlines are upon us, and it seems like a perfect moment to have another episode of Admission Insight Podcast.
I think so, too. So families who have listened to Admission Insight before, thanks for tuning back in. And if you're new to Admission Insight, this podcast is designed to give you and your family insight into the application timeline, process, and even more so, kind of what independent schools are all about.
So what's the topic we're going to tackle today?
Today we are going to talk about the SSAT, that Secondary School Admission Test.
Ooh, I feel anxious already.
So you say you want to apply to private school. We're going to show you what to do. Walk through the steps to take. And everything's going to turn out great. We're going to find the right fit. Both for you and for your kids. Based off school culture and needs. We're going to bolster your chances to succeed.
So Billy, why did you pick this topic? And what are you hearing from families? What are the kinds of questions that prompted our deep dive into this topic today?
Sure. So at this point in the year, as you mentioned, it's busy. We have lots of families coming in for their interviews. And every day I'm getting questions from parents during that parent interview about the SSAT. They're asking how a school values the test, how much of a factor it is in a decision to accept a child. They ask about prep. They sometimes just ask kind of what is the test. And so it's certainly the topic of conversation, and we thought it would be helpful to shed a little insight into that test.
So let's break this into four main sections, just an overview of the test, a little bit of information about how to sign up, and then a little discussion about what it might mean in the process, and then finally, what can a student do to prepare?
Sounds good to me.
So as part of overviewing this test, I think it's helpful to just remind ourselves of the actual purpose of it. What's the history of it? Why does it exist? What do we intend to find out from these testing results?
So the SSAT began as a strategy that independent schools employed to kind of level the playing field in terms of assessing applicants. This standardized test could be administered to any school-age child across the country, no matter what type of school they were in. And it was intended to, as I mentioned, kind of be an equal test where regardless of where you were in school, who your teachers were, where you're from, you could take this test and have a fair shot at, you know, proving your intelligence.
So you're speaking in the past tense. Do you think the purpose has evolved and changed over time?
I do. And I think that there are some variables that, you know, unfortunately, result in an unlevel playing field. So, for example, socioeconomic status can have an impact on test results here. How much prep a family is able to afford is going to give some students an advantage over others. So I think over time, some of that, you know, equality in the test has maybe dissipated a bit. So the Enrollment Management Association, they very clearly state now, here in 2019, that the purpose of this test is to predict first-year GPA and success in an independent school.
Okay, I think that's helpful to keep in mind as we go forward.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's just start with some basics, sort of an SSAT 101, if you will. There are three levels of this test: elementary, middle, and upper. Elementary is geared for students in third and fourth grades. Middle is for students in 5th through 7th grades, and upper is for students in 8th through 11th grades. What's really important to keep in mind if you have a student who's taking either the middle or upper level tests in particular is that the same test is administered to a pretty large age range. So in other words, a 5th grader is answering the same questions that a 7th grader is, and an 8th grader is answering the same questions that a 10th or 11th grader is answering. So the results are scaled by age group, so a student is only compared to their age group. But I pause here to appreciate that for students who are used to doing really well in school and answering every question correctly or nearly correctly. If they're on the younger end of the scale, they're going to have to learn how to pace themselves and how to address questions that relate to material that they've not yet learned. So if you have a child or children applying to independent school, first you need to see which tests are required and for what grades. Some schools actually do not require the SSAT. They require another standardized test, such as the ISEE, or maybe in the case of international, the TOEFL. So you need to do a little bit of research before you begin. So at Pennington, for example, we are 6th through 12th grade. But the students applying to 6th through 8th are not required to submit the middle level SSAT test. Why? Well, it's a really interesting story, Billy, and you may recall that we had a very bright 12th grader who had been here since 6th grade, and she, her senior year, asked to do an internship in admission in which she got access to confidential information, and she was able to do a longitudinal study of SSAT results versus the actual performance in 6th through 8th grades. And do you remember the conclusion?
It wasn't predicting success all that well.
Exactly. So the then admission team dropped the SSAT scores as a requirement for our 6th through 8th grade application process. That was about 15 or 20 years ago, and we've never gone back. So it's important to, before you run out and sign up for the test, see what's required and for which grades and why. Then once you're ready to sign up for the test, the frequency of the test is that it's administered once a month from October to April. So the summer months are off, so you may want to know that as you strategize. Each test takes up really an entire Saturday morning. It's a 3-hour and 5-minute tests at the upper and middle levels. And the elementary level, if you happen to have a child sitting for that, it's under 2 hours. Then the sections are quantitative, which is broken into two separate sections for upper and middle levels, and just one section for the elementary level, a reading comprehension section, a verbal reasoning, and an essay. The essay is not scored, but every admission team will take a look at that essay to see how the child writes in a timed environment, kind of impromptu, just responding to a prompt.
Great. So Sharon, do you think next you could take families through a little bit of information on signing up for the test and maybe some benefits of doing that earlier rather than later?
I would love to, because actually there is an entire strategy to signing up for the SSAT. Obviously, you just go online and click on a link to get started at the SSAT website, but you don't want to do that, say, the night before the test is going to be administered or the week before. Sign up begins a month or two in advance, depending on the test date. And the later you sign up, the more expensive it becomes. Also, the less chance that your child will be able to sit in the test center closest to you, because the seats do fill up in these places. Now, not to panic, these are all Saturday morning tests. If for any religious reasons you're not able to have your child sit on a Saturday, there are some what are called flex times. There are some flex times on Sundays that some schools are offering. And if you should happen to not be able to take any of the test dates, or you decide to apply to independent school a little later in the process and you're in a panic about this, you can go to the SSAT website, you search for flex times, and you find consultants who are authorized and certified to offer this test privately. There's usually a surcharge for that, but it's an option that not a lot of families realize.
Great. And as you're mentioning, Sharon, there is a fee associated with that sign up, and you can get discounts if you're signing up early as opposed to last minute. But what families can also do out there, if you're feeling a pinch and, you know, aren't able to come up with $100 and some for this test, you can always reach out to the admission office of the schools that you're applying to and request a fee waiver.
Correct. And I think most offices are pretty generous with those. And it's to keep in mind that you can also ask for fee waivers for application fees, as well as even financial aid applications.
Right. It absolutely doesn't hurt to ask.
No.
Okay, so Sharon, could you touch on the accommodations that the SSAT may offer, whether a student has a learning difference or is receiving a 504 at their public school, if there is anything that students can do to receive accommodations for this test?
Absolutely, and in fact, we know that at the SAT level, accommodations are really on the rise. I think the number of high school students who are now sitting for the SAT with accommodations has tripled during the past 6 years. The SSAT, it's become easier to apply for accommodations, but again, you have to start in advance. What are these accommodations? It might be something as simple as extra time, being allowed to bring a certain type of calculator into the test room, taking the test in a low distraction setting. These are some of the more common accommodations, although there are certainly others.
That's great. And if a family is hearing this and worrying, oh, well, is that going to put my child at a disadvantage when the admission office sees that they took this with extra time? Short answer is no. And a school will never see whether or not the student took the test with accommodations or not.
Absolutely. Okay, so what do these scores actually mean in the admission process? We both have sat on many admission panels over the years, and that is a question that invariably arises.
It is. And I should probably preface this with that each school is going to receive these SSAT scores a little differently. But what I'm fairly confident about is that no matter what school you're applying to, the SSAT is one factor of many. We ask families to do quite a bit of work throughout this application process with gathering transcripts and teacher recommendations and coming for an interview, writing the student essays, and obviously taking this SSAT. So the SSAT is one piece of the puzzle here. We understand that for some students, very bright students who do well, straight A's in their school, that this standardized test on a Saturday morning might not be an accurate representation of their ability and their proficiency. With that being said, if a student scores below the range that we're kind of looking for, we're just going to want to see the student's academic potential and strength reflected elsewhere in their application. And we give families every opportunity to highlight those strengths. The transcripts and teacher recommendations, for one, are an easy way to show that a student does have ability that may not have come through in that SSAT.
I do want to say to families who are looking for merit scholarship monies that might be out there, in those cases, generally, the SSAT has a little more weight than in just a general applicant.
Definitely.
And, you know, we get the call very often from a concerned parent who says, you know what, my child's SSAT percentile score and ranking doesn't look like their scores and performance on other standardized tests. And I think it's really important to give families a little bit of insight and context for that.
Yeah, so that SSAT will give a couple different scores. So if you're wondering how to read those scores, so first is that SSAT percentile score. And that's going to be from 1 to 99. And this is comparing the child's performance on that SSAT across all other students of the same grade and gender who have taken that test in the U.S. and Canada. So that is an opportunity for the admission office to discern between applicants here and see how this one child did in comparison to others.
And let's pause here and consider that applicant pool, because I think that really plays into what the ultimate percentile rankings are. The applicant pool for independent school tends to be small and impressive. These are students who are coming from other independent schools when they were younger, and or they're students in urban areas who are being singled out for they're being recruited and groomed for the aptitude that they have shown, and they're being prepped. So unlike more widely administered in standardized tests, such as even the SAT, where it's this really broad pool of students who are aspiring to go to college in this country at any given moment, the SSAT is narrow. It involves students who have access to prep, and it can be harder to crack through those higher percentiles.
Absolutely. So then the other score, which is not drawing any comparisons to other students in that pool, would be the breakdown SSAT scores on the different subsections within the test. So The admission office is going to see the scores for the verbal section, the quantitative section, and the reading section. It's going to give a sum of all three of those sections, but then we can also view them independently to see how a student was doing in each one of those areas. And I can't tell you how many times the admission office will take a really close look at those scores and see that maybe a student scored low in the reading section, but blew the math section out of the water. So we are looking kind of across that score report to see where are the student's strengths, where might be some of their weaknesses. Just so families have an idea of what a good score might be versus a weaker score, 500 for the upper and middle level tests is the lowest possible score that a student can earn in each individual section, and an 800 would be the highest score that they could answer. So you're looking at an overall range between 1500 at the low end and the 2400 at the very high end.
And if your student happens to fall in the average range, say like the 50th percentile, and the scaled scores reflect that, that's to remember again that they are average within a pool that is definitely above average compared to the national standard.
Absolutely. And feel free to reach out to the admission offices when you've either gotten the scores back or prior to getting the scores back and just asking, what is that average range at your school? And admission offices will be happy to disclose their average, and you can then get a sense if this is maybe worth retaking to give it another shot, or might give you some peace of mind knowing kind of where your student falls in comparison to what the school typically considers to be an average range. So Sharon, I think we'll finish with sharing with the families out there a little bit about the prep process and what students and their families can do to get themselves in the best position possible to do well on this test.
So I agree. That's a question that comes up a lot, and it's often part of the strategy. This is a test where we've seen that prep pays off, but not just a little prep, not just maybe 12 hours or 16 hours, but a strategic focused prep program. We know that the range of cost in that can be from as simple as getting a secondhand book from someone, or accessing free online prep questions and a lot of self-discipline, or it can be tutors who can range anywhere from, well, frankly, up to, we know of families who are spending, this may sound outrageous, but who spend tens of thousands of dollars on prep.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just a reality.
Sure. And I don't think we're ever going to counsel a family into spending that much money.
I would advise them not to.
I think the online free options can certainly suffice. But there are some strategies to be gained from the prep.
It's a tricky test.
Absolutely. For example, while you're taking this test, for every correct answer that a student gets, they're earning a point. For every incorrect question that they're answering, they're getting deducted a quarter point. But what some families don't know is that when you don't answer a question, that's a neutral score. No point to be gained or lost right there. So that's a simple strategy where if you can't narrow it down to two and students are going ahead and guessing, you know, that's probably not going to be in their best interest.
Exactly. The other piece that prep pays off with is the time management, just in terms of the fact that particularly in the quant section, the questions tend to get progressively harder. So there's a pacing to it. And there's also a pacing when we said that those students in the younger grades may not even have the ability to solve some of the hardest questions in the sections to know where they need to not spend their time and move on. So familiarizing your student or your child with this test will definitely pay off in that regard once it's that test morning.
Right. And something that I've heard you say, Sharon, to families is once you've done the prep and, you know, it's that Friday night, at that point, the most important thing can be to get a good night's sleep, have a good breakfast, and go in and take that test. If you don't get the scores that you're looking for in that first time, you do have an option to retake that test. Do you want to say anything about kind of that idea?
I do. So the majority of students will take it twice. However, the majority of students will not see a big difference between their two sets of test scores. The scores don't seem to just naturally rise the second time around because you're a little bit more familiar. Maybe a little bit, but not always. Sometimes it can even be disappointing. Where you will see results out of a second test is when you then look at your strengths, look at your weaknesses, use the first test as a diagnostic tool, and then get in there. If you need vocabulary words, just go to it. Mm-hmm. Start learning those words. Whatever it is, start to scaffold that weakness, build it into a strength, and then sit for the test again, and you will probably love your results.
Definitely. And something that Pennington will do for those students who take the test multiple times is we'll do what's called super scoring. So what that means is that we're going to look at both tests or all three tests, however many tests you've taken, and we're going to try to build your optimal score. So we'll look at each of those sections, those three sections, the verbal, the math, and the reading, and we're going to take your best score from each test and use it to compile one overall score. So I would definitely recommend that you reach out to the different schools that you're applying to and ask them if they will super score your child's results.
That's right. And one last thing I want to offer is that if your student has already taken another standardized test, such as an SAT, a PSAT, an ISEE, always feel free to reach out to the schools that they're applying to and ask whether or not the school will accept that in lieu of the SSAT. That can save your family a lot of prep and time and just stress.
Great.
So, Billy, do you have any final words of advice for families about the SSAT?
Yeah, I've been getting the question a lot from parents that they're taking the SSAT again and it's pushing up against the application deadline, and they're a little concerned that the scores won't get to us by that deadline date. So if you are a family in that situation, I recommend that you call the admission office to the different schools that you're applying to and ask them if they will accept SSAT scores after their deadline. If the school does, then they'll just put a note in the child's file that new test scores are upcoming.
Great. So we certainly hope this was helpful information for you, whether you're a first-time SSAT taker or someone who's been through this kind of process before.
Absolutely. And as Sharon was alluding to earlier, don't hesitate to call the admission office of the different schools you're applying to and ask them questions about the SSAT, about the application process, whatever may be on your mind. We are here to serve you and help you through this process.
So thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on Admission Insight.
So you say you want to apply to private school. We're gonna show you what to do. Walk through the steps to take, and everything's gonna turn.